You're listening to live coverage on AM 770 KTTH Seattle.
Need to be made in order for
they are being made.
Yeah. Okay. So in a matter of
they're moving very quickly.
So I'm glad you asked that because today there's 18,000 of these machines already out there. We're trying to find out exactly where everyone is because you can see that gives you amazing flexibility. Because if people would allow it to be loaned to a state that's in a hot spot or a state where you want to do additional surveillance, 18,000 tests, 18,000 machines is a huge amount. And it really gets to your very question about how we can prioritize what we have at the same time we're moving out what is new. And so really figuring out who should those go to, who can we ask communities, because these will be in the community, to share those machines into the community who need the test now. And I think that's really an incredible question that really needs to be answered over the next 24 hours.
Dr. Burson, a point of clarity about the face covering guidance. You said it's still a point of debate. You said use the phrase the guidance if it comes out. Is the guidance coming out and when?
Yes.
And when, sir?
In the days ahead, we're currently working through the task force, taking the consultation advice, CDC, our top health experts, and we'll be bringing forward the guidance from the CDC in the next several days.
Just remember, it's not a substitute for everything that we're asking people to do. And just to everybody out there across the country, when we say no gatherings of 10, we're looking at, we wanted to be clear, if you have a family of 10, we don't want you to be split up. But we don't expect people to be having dinner parties, cocktail parties. I mean, I know you've seen the slope in the United States versus the slope in Italy. And we have to change that slope. We have to change the logarithmic curve that we're on. We see country after country having done that. What it means in the United States is not everyone is doing it. So we're only as strong as every community, every county, every state, every American following the guidelines to a T. And I can tell by the curve and as it is today that not every American is following it. And so this is really a call to action. We see Spain, we see Italy, we see France, we see Germany, and we see others beginning to bend their curves. We can bend ours, but it means everybody has to take that same responsibility as Americans.
Mr. President, can I have a quick follow-up on oil, please? In your conversations with Russia and Saudi Arabia, did you have to make any concessions to get them to agree to cut their production? Mm-hmm. Like, did you agree to cut U.S. production of oil?
No, we didn't discuss that. They want to do that. It's good for their countries, and we did not discuss that now.
NBC News has learned the Navy is set to fire the captain of the USS Theodore Roosevelt after he raised red flags about the COVID-19 outbreak on his ship. It appears as if he's being punished for trying to save the lives of the sailors in his command.
No, I don't What's think so assessment? At all, but we're going to wait a little while because I understand there's a news conference by the Secretary of Defense about that. But, you know, I don't agree with that at all. Not at all, not even a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you. This morning you said once again that New York got off to a late start and they should have pushed harder. But governors and other state leaders say they rely on the federal government to assess the situation and how risky it is. And they want to know, how would they have known to start sooner without your guidance?
Well, they have experts, and frankly, long after we came out and talked about it, look, how would I have known to cut off China? I cut off China very early, and if I didn't, we would have a chart that you wouldn't believe. So how would I know to do that? How would I know to cut off Europe? I cut off Europe very early. I mean, you have to make a decision. People knew that some bad things were going on, and they got off to a late start. And some others got off to a late start also. But we cut off China. If we didn't cut off China, we would have been in some big trouble. And we cut it off. And you know what? We cut it off way early. Go ahead.
Mr. President, to follow up on the insurance point in a separate question that came in from a colleague who can't be in the room. On the insurance point, is there going
to be
roll call? is there going to be an opportunity for insurance companies, if in fact hospitals are compensated for uncompensated care, are the insurance companies going to also get compensated for extraordinary expenses that they may have, or are they assuming that cost?
So we haven't discussed it, but we're talking to them. Getting them not to pay copays in the case of the big ones was a tremendous thing. That's a lot of money they gave up. But we're discussing that with the insurance companies. We'll let you know. It'll be pretty quick. Yeah, go ahead.
Question on Japan, sir. They are expanding their entry ban to include the United States. Are you planning to take any similar action to ban Japanese nationals from coming to the U.S. as a result of this crisis?
Well, we're looking at a lot of things and a lot of different bans. We have more bans than anybody. We had bans when bans weren't fashionable, if you remember, right at the beginning of this administration. It was for different reasons. But we've had bans long before people thought of bans. When I did China, it had never been done before. I was the first one to do it. Remember that. It had never, according to what I read in all the papers, this had never been done. This is a terrible thing to do. And 4 weeks later, they were all saying, we're lucky we did it. So we're looking at it. No, we heard that. I think it's fine that they do that. They're trying to protect their country, and we have to protect our country. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, I asked you yesterday about stay-at-home orders and if that decision should be left in the hands of governors or if you're considering telling the entire nation stay at home.
Yeah.
So just today, Georgia's governor finally issued a stay-at-home order saying that individuals could have been infecting people before they ever felt bad, but we didn't know that until the last 24 hours. Is that ignorance, gross incompetence?
He's a good governor, Brian Kemp. He's
You've
a very good. He's a good governor, and he has to make his own decision on that. I let the states. I think we're about 85% positive on that. If you look, I think it's about 85% of the states have got to stay at home. Brian's a great governor. It's his decision. He made that decision. Ultimately, he decided to go along with it. And they're doing well. And the state's doing well in many respects. Yeah, go ahead, please.
This is another question from a colleague who couldn't make it in today, from Emily Gooden at the Daily Mail. I had a question in regards to the Russian plane that landed at JFK with medical supplies. Did the United States ask Russia for this aid, or is it just accepting it?
We're accepting it. It was a very nice offer from President Putin. I spoke to him the other night, as I told you, and they had excess medical equipment, things, and I'll take it. I think it's very nice. We've had some from China. We also help other countries. We like doing that. Like I said before, if we have excess stuff, we let it go out. We let some go out where, frankly, they had orders for it, and I didn't want to stop orders. It was a very nice gesture on behalf of President Putin, and I could have said no thank you, or I could have said thank you. And it was a large plane of very high-quality medical supplies, and I said, I'll take it.
Is he offering any further aid in your conversation?
I think he would if we asked for it, he was very nice. It was part of the call. He suggested, he said, we have it. It's additional. They have very big difficulties with this virus also, as you know, Russia. I thought it was a very nice gesture on behalf of President Putin. I could have said, no, I don't want it, or I could have said, I'll take it. And you know what I said? I'll take it.
Except further aid.
I think so, yeah. If they send things that we need, I'd take it. Sure. Nice gesture. I'm not concerned about Russian propaganda, not even a little bit. He offered a lot of medical, high-quality stuff that I accepted, and that may save a lot of lives. I'll take it every day. Please,
President,
send it back.
You said that in January you tweeted that you stand with the people of Iran since the beginning of your presidency, and you'll continue to stand with the people of Iran, given the fact they're so hard hit with coronavirus.
Oh, they're very hard hit. They're very hard hit. In a lot of ways, they're hard hit. They're hit in with their economy, with their military, and with, obviously, the virus. They're very hard hit.
Would you consider easing sanctions to allow medical supplies to get in?
Well, they haven't even asked us to do that. Okay?
But we know that sanctions hit the people, not the government.
You know what? They haven't even asked us to do that. If they want to meet, we'd love to meet and would love to settle the whole thing out, but I doubt they'll be.
So realistically, how does a person in Tehran pick up the phone and call you?
I think they love America. I think the Iranians love America. I think they'd love to be free. I think they'd love to have just some of the things that we have. You know, I remember Iran many years ago. Friends of mine were always in Iran. They were doing real estate deals in Iran. They were building beautiful buildings all over Iran, apartment houses. They were very successful. And then one day that came to an end. But you know what? The people of Iran, they remember that. It was a long time ago, but not so long ago, and they remember it. And I'll tell you, they love America. They love what we stand for. And we're not looking for change. We're not looking for government takeover, government change. You know, this country's been through that many times. That doesn't work.
People, do you encourage other countries to who are maybe concerned about
what I did is, you know, I put it out very publicly with respect to Iran. I said if they need help with respect to the virus, we'd love to send. We have the greatest medical professionals in the world. We'd love to send.
What countries are you encouraging, perhaps, to lend their support? Because there are many countries that feel.
I'm not encouraging or discouraging. They've been a very hostile country. They made a deal that President Obama should have never made. It was a short-term deal, giving them $150 billion, giving them $1.8 billion in cash. Right. Green,
your
fill up this room five times.
Do you have a moral responsibility?
No. He's even asking about it. I have a moral responsibility to help them if they ask. If they needed help, I would certainly consider different
things.
The
United Nations says they need help.
Well, that's up to the United Nations. I'm talking about us. And what happens is if they wanted help, because they have a very big case of virus, a very, very big case, one of the worst on earth, if you believe what you're reading, and I happen to believe what I see and what I know. And if they wanted help, we'd give them help. Yeah, you had one in the back, please.
Mr. President, and a question for Jared, too. You talk about a granular approach to receiving data from these different states and regions to try and figure out what they need. The President, you just enacted the DPA on ventilators and masks. Are there any signals from across the country that might indicate there are other things besides masks and ventilators that are slowly kind of rising in terms of need, like hand sanitizer, for instance?
Sure. So the first issue that we've been dealing with was really the ventilators. That was the number one, number two, and number three from all the states. What we've been finding is that people have a lot of these requests based on the models. And what we've been trying to do over at FEMA is say to the states, well, if you would like ventilators, we need to see first look in your states, right? So, for example, in northern Jersey, they're going down to southern Jersey and they're finding ventilators and trying to relocate them to where they have their hotspots. The second thing that we've done is we've asked them to survey for alternative ventilators. Dr. Berg spoke before about the anesthesia machines and the ability to convert them to be ventilators. So we're asking people to be resourceful inside their states before they come to the federal government. The third thing we've been asking states to do is to provide what their daily utilization rates are. So everyone's asking for everything. One congressman got a call from his local hospital saying, I need 250 ventilators. And he said, well, you don't have a COVID patient within four counties. Why do you want 250 ventilators? And he says, well, we just want to be safe. We're very nervous right now. So what you have all over the country is a lot of people are asking for things that they don't necessarily need at the moment. And the job of FEMA and Admiral Polovchek has been to try to make sure that we're getting the real data from the cities, from the states, that we can make real-time allocation decisions based on the data. And right now what's happening is a lot of the different cities and states are providing FEMA that information. We're talking to them daily. They're updating that information daily, and that's enabling the federal government to make much more informed decisions on where they position ventilators. You also have a situation where in some states, FEMA allocated ventilators to the states, and you have instances where in cities they're running out, but the state still has a stockpile. And the notion of the federal stockpile was it's supposed to be our stockpile. It's not supposed to be state stockpiles that they then use. So we're encouraging the states to make sure that they're assessing the needs, they're getting the data from their local situations, and then trying to fill it with the supplies that we've given them. The same thing with the mask. So the N95 mask is actually an item that wasn't used as frequently in the medical profession before this. It was used mostly for diseases. So speaking to a lot of the doctors and hospital administrators, they would say they used actually a very low percentage of the N95 masks. What the president and the vice president were able to do with Congress was to get the waiver so that you could expand the pool, because a lot of the masks were used to defer the construction industry. So now there's a much bigger pool of masks in the country. There was a stockpile. They distributed that based on where they anticipated a lot of the need would go. But a lot of that still is stuck with the states, and it hasn't trickled down to the right places within the state. So I would just encourage you, when you have governors saying that the federal government hasn't given them what they need, I would just urge you to ask them, well, have you looked within your state to make sure that you haven't been able to find the resources? Unlike other countries, a lot of the medical system in America is a private. It's not a public government controlled. So you have to get the data from what's in their state, look at it in that way, and then make sure that they're being resourceful in a way to do that. And also ask them what their utilization percentage is, because if one governor is asking for more ventilators, and if the federal government sends them more than they need, the goal here is not to have ventilators sitting in a warehouse where you have another state where you have people who need them. So what we're trying to do is make informed, data-driven decisions, both on ventilators, masks, any other supply we can get, to make sure it's going to the people who need them.
I wonder if you could weigh in on the reports that, of which I'm sure you're aware, where unnamed White House officials have described your role as being something of running a shadow task force. How do you describe your role? How do you describe the qualifications you bring to your role?
I would just say very simply, look, the president asked the vice president to run the task force. The vice president asked me to assist. I've been serving really at the direction of the vice president. He's asked me to get involved in different projects. The vice president and I speak probably sometimes 5-10 times a day, but everything that I'm doing is at the direction of the vice president. If some people are talking to you, that means they're probably not informed as to what's going on. But I can assure you that I'm speaking with Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci, the vice president, and the president multiple times a day to make sure that I'm accomplishing and focusing on the objectives that the vice president deems a priority.
Chair, to follow up on the ventilators and the national
stockpile. A lot of fake sources out there, they don't exist. I read about it for a long time. I've been reading a lot of fake sources that don't exist. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Jared, what triggers sending a ventilator from the national stockpile to a state? In other words, how sick does somebody have to be to get one of these national ventilators?
Well, that's not the issue that's not the criteria. You have the states basically putting in their requests, and they're giving us their utilization percentages. So it's a very simple formula. The states should know how many ventilators they have in their states. And by the way, some governors you speak to are senators, and they don't know what's in their state. You know, some governors also speak to, and they'll know to the number how many ventilators they have in their state, because that's the first thing a good manager will do. What a lot of the voters are seeing now is that when you elect somebody to be a mayor or a governor or a president, you're trying to think about who will be a competent manager during the time of crisis. This is a time of crisis, and you're seeing certain people are better managers than others. So what I would say is that the way that the federal government's trying to allocate is they're trying to make sure, A, you have your data, right? Don't ask us for things when you know that when you don't know what you have in your own state, just because you're scared. You asked your medical professionals, and they don't know. You have to take inventory of what you have in your own state, and then you have to be able to show that there's a real need. And so we pre-positioned a lot of things because most governors off the bat didn't know what they needed. But FEMA has a joint command with Admiral Polovchek, Admiral Giroir, and Pete Gaynor, where every couple hours when their requests come in, they evaluate the request, they all vote on the request. And then if there's something that they want to elevate to the task force, they bring it to the vice president to make a recommendation.
You might ask Deborah that we're literally tracking hospitalization cases on a daily basis, interacting with governors and health systems, and that informs our supply chain decisions.
Yeah, I want to thank the health commissioners and all of them that have been sending hospital data in. I think it's really critical and important to all of us. New York City has been providing information, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and certainly Louisiana in these hotspots. And that allows us, we can see where they are with the rising number of cases, where they are in their curve, what can be predicted, and really ensuring that people get what they need as they need it. And so I think many of the governors now and the health commissioners have been, I had to use 20, I'm intubating 20 people a day now. I have enough for the next 3 days. If that doubles, we're seeing our hospitalization rates stabilizing, but we still think there will be this many more in the next days. That's the information that they then translate into providing the ventilators. So when you see the ventilator numbers going out, they're going out in 150s and 200s, because I think early on, we sent a big bolus out. And then not all of them, even today, have been fully utilized. And so we want to make sure every state and every hotspot can be reassured that ventilators are there for them as they move through the curve. And I think to date, we've been able to do that. And I think that's what's important to me, is that people have what they need when they need it. And to date, people who have needed ventilators have been able to get on ventilators. And I think that's our goal with governors and with the mayors, to make sure that continues to happen. But that means all of us have to work together. And I think that's what's been really important over the last few weeks, is people are not making generic requests anymore. They're making data-driven requests because they know precisely what's happening in their hospitals.
Dr. Birx, when you were up here a little bit ago, you talked about the curve and what you're seeing, and your concern that people are not abiding by the social distancing guidelines. And you seemed in your voice to be quite concerned about that. Has the curve changed enough at this point where that 100,000 to 240,000 people likely to die, has that shifted upwards at all?
No, it's just when I look at what... So we're in week 2.2. in our guidelines. And I guess what I expected when the president put out guidelines that said, don't go to bars, don't be in groups more than 10 people. When we said that now over 16 days ago, that was serious. And then you could see what happened subsequently. And you can see the number of individuals who have been infected since then. Because the people we're seeing infected today and in hospitals today were infected after the guidelines went out. So that's what we're worried about. And we're worried about that we're still in this. And that's why the president extended it for 30 days. But we have to get out of this. We have to start seeing this.
But Deborah, aren't you referring to just a few states? Because many of those states are dead flat.
Yes, so yes. There are states that are dead flat. But, you know, every what changes the curve is a new Detroit, a new Chicago, a new New Orleans, a new Colorado. Those change the curves because it all of a sudden spikes with the number of new cases, because you have a certain projection of new cases and then a whole nother city comes on top where they're in their logarithmic phase. So those ones that I talked about that had test results greater than 13% positive, all of those states or all of those counties are in logarithmic phase. That means there are a lot of counties that aren't. And we're excited about those counties that have been testing and still finding quite flat. And hopefully maybe Sunday or so, or sometime this weekend, we can go through all the states and the curves again. So California, you can see Washington. Where, you know, the California and Washington are still steady. But we're watching very carefully because we see that you can go from this to this very quickly. And this should not be happening any longer in new places if people are doing the social distancing, washing their hands, not getting together in large groups more than 10.
I look at the graphs all the time.
Yes.
And you have many, many flatliners. I call them flatliners. I'm amazed at them. And you have a couple that are up. It's hard to blame the flatliners for not doing a good job.
No, I don't want to say that. No, don't. No. Thank you, sir. In fact, I want to praise the states that, and I think I want to be able to call them out and show you their graphs so you can see they've had steady small cases. They're testing, and they're doing a lot of testing, and their percent of test positives are under 5%. I mean, we have a whole group of states who are testing, and their positivity rate is under 5%. We know what it looks like on the logarithmic curve. You're in the 13%, then 15%, then 26%, and then 35%. That's what we're trying to prevent. And it's the metro areas that are absolutely crucial in this. And so if you're in a metro area, all right, you're in a small city, please make sure all of your friends and family are following the guidelines. That's the best thing we can
do. Because I saw those pens going 5 minutes ago. They were so, they were thrilled. And the fact is, yes, we compare them to Italy, one place. And we have many places that are really doing great. And I think that's what Deborah meant. She didn't mean all of them. So when you register tomorrow, maybe you'll write it correctly. She was talking about one state, and another state is, you know, having a hard time. It's, and they're closely associated. And by the way, the people are doing a very good job, including the people that live there. But when Deborah was talking about Italy, she was talking about the one, and then the other was lower. And then you have mostly states that have been unbelievable. So she wasn't talking about the average of everything. She was talking about an individual state, which is, I think, still better than Italy. Italy's having a hard time. By the way, Spain is having a hard time. France is having a hard time. But our states, generally speaking, it's like lots of different countries all over. We have many of those countries are doing a phenomenal job. They're really flat. And I think that's what you meant. I don't know. I don't want to speak, but I thought that's what I understood she meant. Yeah, please.
Talk about that though, because coronavirus is present in all 50 states. You said before that you, when you implored mayors and governors to be serious about this, you said once it shows up, mitigation efforts are too late. So how do you then square that with this notion that some states are doing well? I mean, the virus doesn't abide
because
by they,
some states they stay in better. They're not touching. They're not whatever it is. They're not going out. They're not in groups. And some states are not probably as good, or for whatever reason, or they also live a lot closer. You know, New York is very dense. And, you know, California's pretty dense, too, and they've got a very good record going so far. We hope it doesn't spike up, but it's very flat. We have states that are doing incredibly well. I mean, when I looked at some of them, I looked at some states that I would have thought maybe wouldn't have done as well, and they're really flatlined. Hope they stay that way.
Right.
I hope they stay that way.
Isn't that the point that you want those states to stay flatlined?
I want them. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No. But when Deborah mentioned about Italy and our country, she wasn't referring to our country. She was referring to one state.
But she's encouraging people to do a better job of following these social distancing measures. That's what I'm understanding.
Okay, so my understanding, I'm going to let her say it. But I think that everybody would have to be thrilled with the way most states are doing. Thrilled. The flat line states, states that have almost no bump. I mean, I would think. Now, then you have others where, for whatever reason, they're higher. That's different. But you can't condemn people living in a flatliner with people living in something where there's the big bump or the bigger bump or more akin to Italy, where they have some very unique problems. In all fairness to Italy, they have some very unique problems. But if you'd like to come up and...
So how many flatline do we have? And
a lot
how many
of them.
Do we how many
so
do we have?
So why don't I bring
you're
you the whole
to live coverage
again.
Of the press briefing for the Coronavirus Task Force on AM 770 KTTH and the Jason Rantz Show.
That's why I started with there are states where you've heard me talk about how concerned I was. These are states that before the guidelines went out or right after the guidelines went out. I mean, you can look at it's on the website if you go to the healthdata.org about when governors made clarity about closing their states as far as the social distancing, the washing of the hands, the bars, the doing takeout. And you can line that up with the presidential guidelines. And not all states, when the presidential guidelines came out, immediately followed the presidential guidelines. Not all states did. There are states that also may have gotten many more seeds from outside communities. That certainly is one of the issues that New York and New Jersey, Connecticut and Rhode Island are facing. The virus came in from multiple places into those states. It was undetected early on, and they have a very logarithmic curve. What I'm saying is even one of those curves in one county, in one city, is one curve too many. So I am passionate about everyone following the guidelines because of the outlier curves. Maybe that was a better way of putting it. The outlier curves in specific counties is to make sure that doesn't happen anywhere else.
So would you feel better if every state did a stay-at-home order?
Well, I think most of the states have done that. I think if you... One death from this is one death too many. I mean, I come out of epidemics and pandemics. We know what to do. I know we don't have a vaccine, and I know we don't have a therapeutic, but we know what can be done, and others are doing it, and most of the people in the United States are doing it. It's our communities. It's every American that has to make these changes, and I know they're really hard. And I know it's hard to remember. I mean, I have to say to myself every day, because I'm around very important people, to, like, never touch anything. And I'm just, like, paranoid now about touching things. I'm sure you all are, too. I mean, we've gotten to the place where we don't go to your places on Pebble Beach. We go to the one that's open-aired because, I mean, you're trying to protect your reporters. I mean, I understand that. We're all trying to protect each other, and we all have to adapt to this new reality that we're in right now. And I believe everybody is trying really hard, and I'm just asking them to try really, really hard for these next 28 days because they will make a tremendous difference. We see that evidence. And so it's like having a vaccine or a therapeutic. Because we know what works, and we're asking everybody to apply what works. And I know it takes amazing attention to detail. Because, you know, when you, the minute you forget or do something, you're like, oh, my gosh, I should have never done that. And that's the level of attention it takes.
Covering our faces could help us do
that. So I just want to say, look, many states have started low and slow, and then they stayed at a good level. Some really stayed at a great level. Some, Louisiana is an example. It was low and slow, and they were looking great. I was watching it because, you know, it's a kind of a place people go to with Mardi Gras, which sort of is an interesting point. Because after Mardi Gras, it was low, and then all of a sudden it went up very rapidly, and now it's one of our true hot spots, right? Certain areas of Michigan, Detroit, looked like it was doing pretty good, and then all of a sudden it went up. So you have that too. But I'll tell you what, we have states that have been really incredible in the fact that they have kept so low. They have not, you haven't seen the bump, and I hope you don't. I hope you don't. And you have a couple that for a lot of different reasons, and that's not to blame anybody, but they are at a higher level, but very few. I think, Deborah, I mean, I may say, I think most people have actually followed the presidential, you can call them whatever you want. I would never use the word dictates, because if I use that word, I would be in such trouble. In fact, you'll put me in trouble just that I even mentioned the thought of it, okay? But we make a recommendation, and I think they've done a good job. Maybe they started a little later, but maybe they're also more difficult states. But we've done, I think, on average, really phenomenally as a country. I think we've done phenomenally because when you looked at that graph the other day, I don't know if you saw it. I assume you saw it. Everybody in the world saw it. But you look at all those lines on the bottom, one color after another, all different, representing different states. It's all crowded at the bottom. And then you had two that were up, but you had, I don't know, almost every one of them was down low, very low. So there were a lot of people listening. And I just did want to clear, because I don't need headlines tomorrow, neither does the country, because I don't want this country working so hard and then have press that is, in this case, maybe misinterpret something. Because I might have, when I heard it, I was surprised at first, too, but I understood what Deborah meant. But I think it's very important, because I think it's very important for you to be accurate. One other thing, just a quick thing. So what I found is when governors call me, I mean, I think in every case they've always been so nice, so nice. And I've seen them and heard them say, thank you very much. You have done a great job, a fantastic job in one case. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Then I'll see the governor, usually of the opposite party, in almost all cases, except maybe one. But in almost all cases, they're very generous. They're very nice. They thank me. Everything's great. We're doing a great job. And then I'll see them on television, and it's like a different person. And I realize there are some people, because of politics, that if they say, we want 1,000 ventilators, And I'll say, no, Jim, I want to give you 5,000 ventilators. They'll say, thank you. You are the greatest president that's ever lived. And then I'll see them quoted in a paper or see them on a show. And they'll say, the president didn't come through for me. I'm very disappointed in the president. And we have a lot of that. They're very happy when they talk to me. Then I see him. But there are some people, if they asked for 500 of something, and if I gave them 5,000, they will say, you'll say, how's the president doing? Well, we don't like the job. To my face, they're very nice. But then sometimes, I guess they assume I don't watch them or something, but I watch very closely. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, one especially vulnerable population is the prison population, and that's especially with Jared here. I wondered if you could address what the federal government is doing to protect
Well, it's
inmates.
Vulnerable in that it's close together, really. I can't tell you about age, but a lot of young people in prison. Some states, I have not done that at all, but some states are letting people out of prison. Some people are getting out that are very serious criminals in some states, and I don't like that. I don't like it. But it's a city or state thing in certain cases, as you know. I think maybe Philadelphia comes to mind. So we'll see. Have to see what's going on. And we don't like it. The people don't like it. And we're looking in to see if I have the right to stop it in some cases, okay?
Mr. President, 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment last week. We haven't heard you talk a lot today about what they're going through. So
I think it's terrible. So look, 4 weeks ago, we had the greatest economy in the history of the world, the greatest in the world, greatest in the history of the world. We had the most jobs ever in the history of the United States, almost 160 million jobs, right? And then one day, I get a call from Deborah, who's fantastic, and from Dr. Fauci. And she said, we have a problem. I said, what's the problem? And they said, we may have to close it up. I said, close what up? They said, close up the country. I said, what's that all about? And we discussed today, and probably not since 1917, we came to that conclusion, and she is a fantastic person, a brilliant person, and this is what she knows. I said, has it ever been this bad? And I think I can represent that you said no, and part of it is a contagion. It's so contagious. It's like, if you sneeze, I probably get it. Whoever heard of a thing like that, okay? And this very talented reporter is bailing out. Okay, he's out of here. I don't blame you. But it's a very contagious thing. And probably the likes of which we've never seen in terms of that. But 1917, so that's over 100 years ago. But that was, you know, it's been written about many, many times. That was a horrible, whether it was 75 or 100 million people, I've heard from 50 to 75. I've heard 75 to 100. But it was tens of millions of people. Now, we have the advantage of communication. This could have been just as bad. I mean, here we can read on the internet. We can see what to do. We can have these meetings. They can watch on television, which they do. A lot of people are watching. A lot of people are watching. And they say, gee, social distancing. But in 1917, they didn't have that option. You know, they didn't know what to do. They just noticed people were dying all over the place. Think of it. 75 to 100 million people died. A lot of people in this country died. To me, it's a great question. How come more people didn't die in this country? And they say it actually started in this country and went to Europe. I mean, we lost a lot of people, but relatively, we lost very few compared to Europe. So this is a terrible thing that happened. And what's happening now with people and jobs. So think of the position I'm in. We have built all together, everybody, not me, everybody, the greatest economy in history. And all of a sudden, people come in that we respect, we know. And here's the thing, they were right. Everybody questioned it for a while. Not everybody, but a good portion questioned it. They said, let's keep it open, let's ride it. If we did that, you saw the other graph, and whether it's true or almost true or maybe not true enough, the number was 2.2 million people would have died. 2.2 million people would have died in a short period of time. In fact, the graph could have been even shorter. I always notice that horrible one where it goes high, it actually comes down a little bit faster. it might have been over faster and you would have lost 2.2 million people. So they come in and they say, we have to close up the country. And I say, you know what that does to this, to the fabric of this country, to people that had great jobs, great family, no problems with money, their 401k, everything is perfect. Then all of a sudden they go from that to having no job in one day. They never even thought of it. And then you see 6 million people unemployed, unemployment numbers get released, and you see 6 million people. And it's an artificial closing. It's not like we have a massive recession or worse. It's artificial because we turned it off. Think of what we're doing. We're saying, don't go to work and we'll pay you. Everything's the opposite. It was always go to work and make a lot of money and do well and the American dream. Because of a hidden enemy, we're saying, don't go to work and we're going to pay you. Look at the money, $2 trillion. And we will probably do more. I think infrastructure would be a fantastic thing to do. You want to get the restaurants back. You give deductibility. You understand what that is. You give deductibility for businesses where they go and they use the restaurants. The restaurants will be bigger and better than they were before. You know, people don't know. A lot of restaurants closed when they ended deductibility. And then they started doing well, but they had fewer restaurants. But the boom of the restaurants is when they had deductibility, where corporations could use them. So, and entertainment. That was a great thing. But they closed it, and then they closed it again, and it wasn't the same. But you want to get them back, you do that. But infrastructure, we borrow our money now at zero. You know, if we were paying 5%, 4%, 3%, it's a different ballgame. We're borrowing. We can borrow long-term for zero, literally zero. You know that, because we're considered the safe investment all over the world. They want money in the United States. That's where they want the money. So I know better than anybody. I know what they're going through, and it's horrible. But you know what I want to do? I want to be able to get them back fast. When this is over, it's going to be a day we're going to celebrate, because everyone's going to go to work, and I think we're going to have boom times. I think it's going to be great. And we've learned a lot. We've learned about borders. We've learned about reliance on other countries. We've learned so much, so much, that I think we really have a chance to be bigger and better and stronger. And I think it's going to come back very quickly. But first, we have to defeat this enemy. So we will see you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to live coverage of the Coronavirus Task Force. That was the president. A lot to digest over the course of the last nearly 2 hours. Earlier in the press briefing, the Treasury Secretary was there, Steve Mnuchin, to make sure that everybody knows that the checks as part of this $2 trillion stimulus package is on the way.
All the digital companies, prepaid debit cards, we're working with all of them to make sure we have a process that every American gets their money quickly. This money does people no good if it shows up in 4 months, and we will deliver on that promise.
So quickly is a matter of weeks then, perhaps, not months.
Quickly is a matter of weeks and not months. That's correct.
So weeks and not months. By the way, if you are just joining us, you are listening to the Jason Rand Show live coverage, concluding of the press briefing coming from President Donald Trump and the Coronavirus Task Force. A lot of things beyond just the checks that are coming. We heard earlier from Rear Admiral John Polochek that he is pushing a ton of PPE, personal protective equipment, to the states, specifically New York City, which has been hit the hardest. 200,000 masks are expected tomorrow. But when we're talking about the entire country, we've got a shipment coming in tomorrow of 22.5 million gloves, 5.2 million face shields, 7,600 plus ventilators. You heard earlier from Admiral Polochek how, generally speaking, when we're getting stuff from overseas, the amount of time it takes via shipping, via boat, is 37 days. 37 days to get from overseas to the United States and then distributed to the parties that actually need them. So now they're saying they're doing it over the air. We can already report that there have been at least 6 flights that have already taken place in the course of the last few days just to get all of these much needed pieces of equipment to the United States. At the same time, at 5 o'clock, Governor Jay Inslee is going to deliver a state address, an address to the state. We're expecting a whole host of possibilities. He could extend, as he's been saying over the course of the last couple of days, maybe actually more like a week, that we're going to extend the stay-at-home in a shelter. We can maybe hear some different guidance as to whether or not we should be wearing masks. That guidance is coming already from the Trump administration. He hinted at it. He didn't get into the specifics, but it sounds like we're going to get new guidance on whether or not we should be wearing masks and what that might look like. So we're going to preview that, and of course, we're going to air that live when we come back. You are listening to the Jason Rancher. So we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to take a look at what's been going on locally, how some folks have decided that they're going to exploit all of this for political gain. You're listening to the Jason Rancher. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Live on this Thursday afternoon. Really do appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget, at 5 o'clock, we're going to go to live, uninterrupted coverage of Governor Jay Inslee as he addresses the state. Usually that means something big is going to happen or a substantial announcement. I've got some guesses as to what's going to happen, mostly because over the course of the last several days, he's indicated that he is thinking about extending the stay-at-home order. If he wants to do that, I hope he just says it now rather than continue to sort of drag us along, because there is a little bit of uncertainty when he does that. Now, it's also possible and likely that he's going to give us an update on some of the numbers. Hopefully it is exactly what we've been hearing nationally coming from Dr. Deborah Birx and Dr. Anthony Fauci over the course of the last couple of days had mentioned that Washington State is doing well, that we're seeing a flattening of that curve. Today, of course, Dr. Birx noted that we are one of the states that for the last several days have been pretty steady at about 8%, which of course we want that to be 0% of infections and deaths associated with those infections. But 8% versus what we're seeing in New York and New Jersey in the mid-20s and lower 30s, that's considerably better than other states. And so hopefully we'll get some additional good news coming from the governor. What I can tell you about what we've been seeing right now here in Washington, but in particular in Seattle, very clearly folks exploiting this health crisis for ideological purposes, for political gain, not necessarily their own political gain, but to install socialist policies. And I know some people are saying, oh, you're crazy, Jason. I imagine some of the liberals will be thinking that. But no, when you actually look at what it is that they're proposing and trying to do, it's very, very clear. And I'm not shocked by any of this. You've got the socialists on the Seattle City Council, Tammy Morales and Shama Sawant. They're coming up and they're saying, hey, we want a moratorium on rent, which is flatly theft when you think about it, because they don't make a difference. They show no distinction between a landlord who maybe is an individual who owns one, maybe two properties that are small, duplexes or maybe triplexes. They compare that person as exactly the same as some landlord or property manager from a huge corporation. And Morales, the councilwoman, speaking with Cairo 7, says that a lot of people right now are at risk of losing their homes.
We know that during this public health crisis, when people have been ordered to stay home, that those who have lost their jobs are now also at risk of losing their home.
And she's 100% correct, but she's using that fact and the emotional connection one would have to learning that someone might lose their home through no fault of their own to push for suspending rent payments in Washington State. That's what she's asking the governor to do. So we'll see what he ends up doing. I don't know how legal that actually is, because it's not a very smart move to just flatly say we're going for the month of March and presumably April, for those of you who weren't able to pay for March, and all of April, you don't have to pay your rent. Well, someone still has to get paid. That landlord that owns that duplex, you do understand that they use that rent paycheck to survive, yes? This is their business. So what about them? This is their property. They have bills to pay. And it's not just about them paying off a mortgage, because at the same time, we're hearing from the same council members that they want the president to say no more mortgages, at least for the month of April. Understand that they just want to go down that position. So when the landlord says, OK, well, how do I afford my health care? Oh, we're going to cover that, too. Oh, that's awesome. What about my schooling? Oh, no, we're going to cover that, too. They want to forgive absolutely everything because this is about installing socialist policies. That's the trend here. And they're not hiding their agenda, whether we're talking about here in Seattle or anywhere else across the country. Listen to this question that was posed this week to Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom is a very progressive Democratic governor from California.
I'm wondering if you see the potential, as some others in the party do, for a new progressive era, if you want to call it that, in national politics and policy, and whether there's the opportunity for additionally progressive steps, such as the ones that I listed on the national and state level going forward.
So in other words, can we use this crisis to install new progressive policies? This is what Gavin Newsom said.
Absolutely. We see this as an opportunity.
They see this as an opportunity. Never let a good crisis go to waste. That's what Rahm Emanuel said, former chief of staff for Obama, former mayor of Chicago, which has become a hellhole. Never, ever give up an opportunity to install some kind of ideological position, because when people are scared or when people are otherwise occupied, it makes it a little bit easier for you to install these policies.
To reshape the way we do business and how we govern. And that shouldn't put shivers up the spines of, you know, one party or the other.
Yes, it should. 100% it should. This whole idea that it should not give a shiver up to your spine if, for example, you're a Republican or if you're a capitalist is absolutely absurd, because the person who's making this proclamation that we need to take on new, quote unquote, progressive policies is someone who is very, very, very far to the left. Now, if this commentary came out of someone who was a hardcore conservative, if it was Rick Santorum who was putting it out there, what do you think would happen? Do you think Gavin Newsom would take the position, oh, it's all, don't worry, this is all common sense stuff, we're just going to do things because we shine a spotlight on some of the stuff that doesn't work? Everything that Newsom views this world through is that socialist lens or that progressive lens. Same thing for Tammy Morales and Shama Sawant. Do you realistically trust Shama Sawant? Of all people, Shama Sawant, the socialist, Tammy Morales, the socialist, to put together policies in place to change things up? Don't worry, it shouldn't send shivers up your spine. Yeah, it should. Everyone who's listening to me right now needs to be concerned. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back at 5 o'clock, we're expecting to hear live from the governor, Jay Inslee, with an address to the state. We'll see exactly what's coming up and what that actually means with the stay-at-home order when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.